searching podcasts for the Daily Perspective. Okay, the Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Greetings and welcome into this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here at the mic, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping that you and yours are safe and sound and healthy, and that you are looking forward to a great weekend. Yep, the weekend is upon us. Let the dancing begin. It is Friday, the 31st, final day of July 2020, and we're heading into a weekend, and hopefully you and yours this weekend will unplug, get away from the cancer that is social media, turn off the news, and just sit back and appreciate life for a little while. We have to. If we don't, we'll go nuts. So do so this weekend. Take a little time, if you can, in fact, if you can, sometime today. Just deactivate, you know, close out Twitter and Facebook and Parler and whatever on your mobile devices and your computers. Turn the programs off and don't turn them back on until Monday. And also, skip the news channels. Stop watching the news this weekend. Just be. Pretend it's 15 years ago. and you don't have the poison that is Twitter, or as some people I enjoy listening to refer to it as the seventh circle of hell, Twitter. I think it's a great description, actually. And I say that because I spend a great deal of time on Twitter watching. And every now and then I'll comment. And when I do, I get a flood of nasty, vile, evil responses from liberals. It's just interesting. But if you want to avoid that nasty, vile evilness, then don't go there. It's like the guy who got beat up every time he went to a certain neighborhood. Well, then don't go there. Stop going there. You bird brain. Don't go where the pain is. So just don't. Escape it for a weekend. And on Monday morning, when you do plug back in, you'll realize, boy, it was better over the weekend. Life is better. I felt better. I was happier. Mm-hmm. Trust me. You will. Well, life around our place is kind of uneventful. I had a Dawson Now session yesterday. It was very interesting. And that will be out not this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday. And it was about being a giver, basically, is what it was. Philanthropy. And it was with a guy, and I'm not going to give you his name. I just want you to be prepared for it, because in 2 weeks it may change your life. This guy, his entire thing, this is what he does. He helps nonprofits by teaching about the benefits of giving. And you may be thinking, oh yeah, well, he's suckering people into giving money to people that beg for money. Yeah, this just no, actually, rational, reasonable, responsible adults realize that part of life is doing things not for yourself, but for other people. And it's one of the most rewarding parts of life when you do something that doesn't benefit you, but it helps someone else. And there are certain people who have discovered that for their life, that's just what they want to do. And so they find ways to make lots of money, and they give lots of money to people who need money. And you may have followed a couple of individuals on social media who do that. I've done that. There are people who have a talent for creating wealth. there are people who just see everything that way. Ding. Just think, oh, well, if I buy this and sell it over here, I'll make money. It's all about that. And I've known business people. That's how, since they were teenagers, that's how they thought. If I buy this beater of a car and just put this in it, I can sell it for this much more and make that much. And then they roll that into something else and something else and something else. And before long, after about a decade of doing that, they're doing very, very well because they learn principles along the way and they apply those principles and they make a lot of money. And no, they don't just go seclude themselves and live in their wealth. Yes, they're comfortable, but they give lots and lots and lots of their money away to organizations and individuals who need their support, who need that help. And they realize that that life is incredible. It is more rewarding than anything else that they could possibly imagine. And so listening to this guy talk about how revolutionary it was, how it is to live that kind of a life and inspiring people to help and telling the stories about people who have, it was an interesting podcast. I encourage you to listen to it. It's coming up a week from Tuesday. That's, let's see, that would be the 4th. That would be the 11th. August 11th. Can you believe we're almost in August? Wow. Where did the year go? I didn't recognize it. It was wearing a mask. Let's see, the rest of the day, I spent working on the door. I told you I've been working on this sliding barn door project. And that's almost complete. I'm to the point now where I have to hang the rail on the wall and that the door hangs off of. And up next, I think we'll be painting the door. There are certain things that I can't do until the door is painted, as in putting the hardware on the door. I've already drilled all the holes and done all the mounting and everything, but I've got to pull all the hardware off and paint the door. And once the door is painted, I can put the hardware back on it again. And then I'm going to have to find some help to get it into the house because it is so big. It's so heavy. I'll never get it in there myself. I just won't. It's just not going to happen. So I told Jane last night, my sweet wife, I said, it's going to take the both of us to get us upstairs. We're going to have to run it out of the garage. It's going to have to go up the driveway. And when I say up, I mean up because we have this steep driveway. It's got to go up the driveway, in the front walk, into the front door, up the stairs and into the kitchen. That's where the little laundry nook is. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, I may want to enlist the help of my buddy Mike and get him to come over one day and help me move this door. Because I think between the two of us guys, we can get it in there without any hitches, without any issues, because it'll just be a matter of literally getting it in the house and then lifting it an inch or two off the floor and hanging it on the rail. And once that's done, it's done. But, well, except for just a couple of little niggly things that have to happen. But that's where that is. So yesterday, I spent a lot of time in the garage working on the door. And that's where that is. And the car, I still haven't heard back from the dealership on the car. The tires were in yesterday. They're supposed to put the tires on, do the alignment, check into the air conditioning issue today. And then hopefully by the end of the day today, I should have the little red car back because I'd like to drive it tomorrow if I can. But that's it as far as my world is concerned. Not much else going on in my world. I'm just kind of going through life and I'm watching things on the news and I'm listening to people talk about it and I'm shaking my head and I'm disgusted. And I got to be honest with you, there was a lot of disgust, a lot of disgust. And it's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to an unplugged weekend is because I watched some of the footage of the eulogizing at the John Lewis funeral. And I have to say this. If you die today, your family's not going to have a funeral for you because of regulations surrounding COVID-19, the coronavirus. It's not going to happen. John Lewis, his body gets shipped all over the country and people get to come and pay their respects. And yesterday they sat cheek to cheek in a packed church and listened to various people talk about the life of John Lewis. And nobody said a word. Nobody said you can't do that. You must socially distance. Nobody said this is not permissible. Nobody said only 50 people can come into this church. Not a soul. But if you died today, you wouldn't get a funeral. Not to mention several. You wouldn't get a funeral. You wouldn't get transported all over the country. You already know that. But you sure wouldn't get a funeral. And your loved ones wouldn't be able to visit you. They wouldn't be able to do anything with you because of how things are. Odds are, because of the way things are, in spite of the fact that you probably didn't want to be cremated, you'd probably end up being cremated. But somebody like John Lewis, he gets a funeral because he is an important Democrat. And that's why he gets a funeral and everybody ignores all of the social distancing regulations. He gets a pass. And people stand and they speak glowingly of him. And one of those people was former President Barack Hussein Obama, who took advantage of time in the pulpit at a church to take repeated shots at President Donald Trump. Among the things he said, "Today we witness with our own eyes police officers kneeling on the necks of black Americans. George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators." Let's just stop right there. We have seen one police officer kneeling on the, well, not necessarily even the neck, more like the shoulder. If you go look at the video of George Floyd, who, by the way, had four times the lethal amount of fentanyl in his system and was behaving very strangely in a way that police officers recognize and are trained to deal with by holding them down when they see this happening until EMTs can arrive to treat them. Witnessing federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators? No, Mr. Obama, that's a bald-faced lie. But then again, you're very familiar and comfortable with bald-faced lies when it stirs up angst and ill sentiment between the races, because your entire methodology for your entire presidency was to divide America against itself and make it fight with each other, so that you could stand above it all and say, "I'm here to bring peace. Listen to me." Those are not peaceful demonstrators who have been tear gassed and batoned. They are people who have thrown things, people who have committed crimes, people who have attacked the police, people who have damaged private and public property. These people have acted in criminal ways. They are not peaceful demonstrators. And he wasn't done. He suggested Trump's trying to suppress votes of minorities. And he hit the GOP for pushing basic voter ID measures. Quote, "Even as we sit here, there are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws and attacking our voting rights with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick." Where do we start? Closing voting locations is done by local voting officials, not federal voting officials. It's done by the people in the state. They make the decisions about where to open and close based on many factors. It's not done by the president. Targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws. if you have to have an ID to get into the Democratic convention, why shouldn't you have an ID to vote? ID laws are not restrictive, except in restricting those who are ineligible to vote. That's the only restriction it provides. Nobody's voting rights are being attacked. They're actually being protected, sir. We'll get back to more of what the liar in chief had to say after the break. There's a bit more. As disgusting as it is, please remember it's Friday. The weekend is here. We can celebrate that at least, huh? Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Friday, the last day of July, 2020, July 31st. Unless they've changed something and added another day to July, this is the last one. Nobody included me in the memo, if that did happen. Oh my gosh, the weekend is here and I'm so happy about it. I'm not happy about... I'm just not happy about the fact that Barack Obama, and others, by the way, stepped up to the pulpit at a funeral and used it to politic. Now, we don't need to be surprised that this happens, because it does. In fact, it happens on a regular basis with politicians on the left, and I'm thinking of one in particular. In Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee is well known for speaking at funerals. The bigger the funeral is in Houston, the more likely the congresswoman is going to show up and take to the podium to speak to the people. And she doesn't ask to do so. She just calls someone and informs them that she will be there to speak. And it doesn't matter if they object. They're ignored. She's going to come. She's going to speak. They are told the congresswoman will speak. Wow. And so Sheila Jackson Lee is well known for doing this kind of things, pulling this kind of a stunt at a funeral. Let's get back to what the divider in chief had to say. Targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws is where we left off. Nobody's being targeted. Nobody's being restricted, except for those who have no legal basis for casting a vote. Those are the only people being prevented from voting. And the claim that certain people don't know how to get an ID or where to get one is a very typical progressive move, because frankly, progressives believe that the people that they're advocating on behalf of are stupid and can't take care of themselves and don't know how to or where to get an ID. Filmmaker Ami Horowitz explored this a few years ago by asking white liberals in California what they thought of voter ID, and when they all answered, well, it's unfair because the people in the black communities, these poor black people, don't have IDs, and they don't know how to get it and where to get it. And then he went to New York. I think he was in the Bronx, I think. And he asked several residents, African Americans, what they thought of that particular statement. And they were all offended because they all had ID and they all knew where to get ID. And they knew everybody knew how to get ID if they didn't have it. So this claim is just a claim. It's something that sounds good to the people who believe the unwashed masses are too stupid to take care of themselves. And that's why he says things like this. Even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick. Really? We are watching, even now, story after story of votes being lost. 20%, sometimes more, of votes not being counted because of the flaws in the Postal Service, in the mail system. Please don't mistake this. We do already have voting by mail. Absentee balloting has been going on for a long time. You can request an absentee ballot. There is a system for handling your absentee ballot. There is a time frame which must be held to for absentee ballots. There is a method to that particular madness, is what I'm saying. There isn't one for the kind of the level of volume, the amount that is going to happen on a national election, where many, many, many times more people are voting by mail. The security's not there. The infrastructure's not there. Nothing is in place. And those factors, on top of the fact that the U.S. Postal Service can't be trusted to get your package to you on time and to process things properly, and you'll see what's going on. I encourage you to check out the CBS News experiment on mail-in voting. After numerous issues with obtaining planted votes, it was an experiment. It was, you know, they went all over the place. This one reporter went all over the place, all over town, and I think it was in New York, and he mailed in envelopes to a post office box he set up to receive all of his votes. And he got it. He went to the post office and looked in the box, and there was a note saying that he had a lot of stuff that wouldn't fit in the box. If you've got a post office box, you know how this is. You get this little tiny post office box, and if there's anything larger than that, there's a note. Please come to the window to retrieve an item we couldn't fit in your box. And sometimes it's a lot. Like, they may have a whole lot of mail. They just couldn't fit in the box. So they put it in a bag or a box for you, or a package of some kind, and they hand it to you through a window. Well, he got that message, went to the window. There's nothing back here for you. And he finally had to get a manager, and the manager had to go do some digging, and it was put someplace besides where the slip had indicated it was stored. They lost all of that stuff. There were problems. He eventually got it, but still it was all mishandled. And on a larger scale, on a nationwide scale, where we're talking about millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of people voting, imagine the impact losing the mail is going to have. You know, in my personal life, I've got an example that happened yesterday. I've been trying to track a package. I was given tracking for a package that I was expecting on my one of the last items on my little Miata project, where I kept checking back. No progress. It's awaiting information. There's no progress. I'm told I can track it. I can track the progress of my shipment. I go and I click on the tab for tracking, and it just says it's awaiting shipment. It showed up on my doorstep yesterday. I go back to the tracking tab. It still says it's awaiting shipment. And this has happened to me many times, where I get a tracking number. It says it's awaiting pickup by the Postal Service, and I'm in limbo for days working on a project. I need something. It's not coming, and it shows up at my door. And I go back and check, and it still says awaiting pickup by the Postal Service. This happens on a regular basis. We're supposed to trust these same people with something as vital as the vote? CBS News this morning co-host Tony Dacapo conducted that experiment. He set up a post office box. He sent out 100 mock ballots in Philadelphia. It was Philadelphia. That's where it was. In the Philadelphia area, he used the same size envelope, weight, and class of mail to simulate genuine mail-in votes, although without the, you know, expedited election mail insignia on the outside of it. After the post office box was set up, 100 more of the ballots were sent out. He said, we're going to see somewhere with probably between 80 and 100 million voters receiving their ballot that way, a former Arizona election official told this guy. After a week, 97% of the ballots mailed had been returned. Three simulated persons, 3% of the voters, were effectively disenfranchised by mail by giving their ballots a week to arrive. In a close election, 3% could be pivotal. Even 4 days after mailing the second round of fake ballots, 21% of those votes had failed to materialize. Almost half of states allow voters to receive ballots less than a half a week before the election. 4 days. Now, this is four. Think about this now. This is not going from California to New York. This is not going from Alabama to Fairbanks, Alaska. This is going from Philadelphia to Philadelphia, the same city. And 4 days after they were mailed, the second round, 21% of them didn't show up. In the same city. Think about that. And these people want vote by mail. And Barack Obama stands at a funeral and talks about the importance of voting by mail and that President Trump is trying to sabotage the vote. As I said, it can't be trusted. The system isn't good enough to handle it. But they're insisting that it happens. Why? Because they know they can manipulate it and take a victory away from Trump on Election Day. That's why.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool.
Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective for Friday, the 31st of July, 2020. Well, everything could be awesome, but no. Hope you're having a good day wherever, whenever you may be listening. Thank you so much for being there. I do appreciate the fact that you make this part of your day. It's encouraging. Thank you very much for listening and for sharing. I sent out on Facebook a post yesterday. I posted to the Daily Perspective podcast Facebook page and asked, I'm trying to check the reach because they've restricted my reach. I got like 9 responses. 9. And it used to be, I get the little reach statements from time to time. And if you have a page, you know how this works. You get a little notice that your page this week has reached X number of people. Posts from your page have reached. And I've been watching this number in the thousands. And I got 9 people. They either liked or responded in some way, and a handful more saw it but didn't, because as a page manager you see that kind of information. A few more people saw it, but I'm trying to remember exactly how many it was. Let me have a look here and see if I can come up with that exact thing and see what it says. Okay. Pardon me. Got the sniffles here. Let's see. It says, okay, I have 9 actual active responses. Okay. Whether it be a like or someone making a comment. It says 20 engagements, which means that, you know, people saw and shared or whatever. 46 total people reached. And there was a time when I could post something and that number would be much, much higher. Much higher. And so I know that things are not what they once were. Let me see, there was something from this morning. I posted something early this morning. 9 people reached. There's another one, 5 people reached. Let me go back a ways here. See if I can go back a few days. Wow. I post more than I think, you know. I think sometimes I really don't spend that much time on social media, but when I go scrolling back through it, there's a lot. But here, maybe this way will work. Let me go up here and check on that one and see if maybe, let me turn that down so it doesn't play for you. I just want to see. Yeah, they're clamping down. And it's sad. It really is sad. They're clamping down. They're restricting my reach. And it's making me wonder what I should do. In fact, this particular podcast this morning, I didn't even put the podcast on Facebook. It just didn't seem worth it to me. Because there is a bit of a hassle, technically speaking, to make it happen. And if they're restricting the reach, and I'm not seeing the activity in the comments like I used to, I'm not gonna use their service for it. So I think very soon I'm just gonna shift it over to someplace else, most likely YouTube, because I can use my exact same setup with YouTube. I just have to change one little bit of information so that it goes to the right place in one of the computers that's running things. So I think that may be happening. Maybe Monday. We'll see. If I feel like messing with it over the weekend, then again, I could just want to unplug like I told you to. Washington State Congressman. He's not a state congressman. He is a U.S. congressman from the state of Washington. He's a Democrat. A guy by the name of Adam Smith. I'm having trouble wrapping my head around this. He has something to say that may make you scratch your head and say, huh? Let me ask you a question. If you get the flu, I'm not even going to say coronavirus. Let's just say the flu. If you get the flu, what is one of the first things, if not the first thing, you're going to do when you've got the diagnosis and you know you have the flu and you're contagious? What's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to grab your phone and you're going to call the last person you spent any kind of time with and say, hey, I just found out I have the flu and I'm infectious. You need to know that. Aren't you? You're going to do that. You're probably going to call your employer and say, hey, I've got the flu. The doc says I am contagious. And your employer is going to say, stay home. You're going to call members of your family. You're going to call your friends. You're going to let people know. Odds are, since we have social media today, even though it can be the seventh circle of hell, you may post a notice on Facebook or Twitter and say, hey, I just found out I have the flu and I'm contagious. If we have spent any time near each other lately, you may want to go get checked. You're going to do that, aren't you? Of course you are. Why? It's just the right thing to do. It's responsibility. You're going to do that. Well, Congressman Adam Smith, the Democrat from Washington, said he believes it was not the responsibility of China to warn the United States about the reality of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is believed to have originated within the borders of China in Wuhan. In a speech on the House floor the other day, Smith voiced his opposition to a proposed measure called the Defend COVID Research from Hackers Act. Representative Mark Green proposed adding it as an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act. Smith said that rushing the amendment through would be a mistake. He also argued that laying the blame at China's doorstep was not totally fair. Quote, one of the gentleman's arguments was that China hid the true risk of the virus from the American people. And yes, that is terrible that China did that. It's not actually their job to warn the American people. It's the president's job to warn the American people. In response to that statement, you could hear other members objecting loudly. He adds, talk about someone who has done a horrible job of warning us of the true dangers of the virus. You don't like mandates? Okay, that's fine. Let's have the leader of our country tell us what we ought to do to protect ourselves. He's the one who's not warning the American people of the true danger of this virus. Smith chided President Trump for not being more apt to warn people to wear masks. Hours later, in a press conference, Trump told reporters he thought the virus would get worse before it gets better and urged citizens to wear masks. He actually said, we're asking everybody that when you're not able to socially distance, wear a mask. Get a mask, whether you like the mask or not. They have an impact. They'll have an effect. And we need to get everything, and we need everything we can get. So this Congressman, Adam Smith, this Democrat weasel, has made a serious mistake here. But nobody on the left will point it out. And that is, he's ignoring the fact that the president put together a group of scientists. Had he not done so, a group of scientists to step up and talk to the American people every day about what was happening with the coronavirus and to make recommendations about what to do. Wear masks, don't wear masks, socially distance, don't socially distance, stay at home, go to work, whatever. These people stood before America, before the press every day and talked about progress, lack of progress, the spread of the infection, everything, every day. Otherwise, we would not know who Dr. Fauci is. We wouldn't know who Dr. Fauci is or Dr. Deborah Brix. We wouldn't know who these people are if President Trump had not taken the initiative to deal with this subject. So the president himself didn't step up. Well, he did to begin with. He didn't personally recommend certain things, maybe, but he did make sure you were told. So, this congressman, Adam Smith, the Democrat from Washington, is lying to you. He's lying to the United States of America for political purposes. You see, we've seen here recently that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats want to lay the coronavirus and COVID-19 at the feet of Donald Trump. When it was Donald Trump who was actually warning people and taking action while the Democrats were playing kangaroo court trying to impeach the president. He was actually doing things. He actually closed down flights and travel from China to the United States and was called a racist for doing so by the same people who are now trying to blame him for the coronavirus and COVID-19. Adam Smith is a liar. He's a Democrat congressman, and he's a liar. But I repeat myself. He is among the worst of the worst. And he keeps getting voted back into office. Speaking of the worst, leftists are the worst of the worst. When somebody on the right dies, they celebrate. It's sad. We lost Herman Cain. Found out about it yesterday morning. We were sitting in the studio getting ready to record a podcast and looked at Twitter and all of a sudden, pop, Herman Cain's passed away of COVID-19, the coronavirus. It was shocking. He was 74, died of complications from COVID-19, and shortly after his death was announced yesterday, leftists and anti-Trumpers immediately jumped at the opportunity to blame President Trump for his death. Because Herman Cain attended the president's rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in June. Now, there's no evidence that Herman Cain got COVID-19 from Trump's Tulsa rally. Not to mention the fact that the rally led to no spike in cases throughout Tulsa. Media outlets and blue check marks on Twitter either inferred or outright blamed the president for Cain's death. Wow. It's so sad. And people mocked him. Here's an example. I feel bad for Herman Cain and his family, but I don't feel bad for his selfishness, his mocking of a deadly disease, nor convincing others that it's safe to go maskless. I refuse to have sympathy for those who put my family in danger. Wear a bleeping mask. That was Tony Posnansky. He tweeted that. Another says, Herman Cain is dead. He didn't wear a mask. Louis Gohmert didn't either. He's asymptomatic. Who knows who he's killing? See a theme? They're dying for Trump. That was Chipmaker. Chip Franklin, a filmmaker. And the viciousness goes on and on and on. And most of it is based in falsehood and lies. And that's who we're dealing with. And that's evil. It's disgusting. It's disheartening. More after the break. Welcome back. It's the final segment of the Daily Perspective podcast for this Friday, July 31st, 2020. And I want you to have a great weekend. Please do. Well, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, is disputing claims suggesting hydroxychloroquine, the anti-malarial drug touted by the president, is a proven treatment for COVID-19. MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell noted that President Donald Trump doubled down on his endorsement of hydroxychloroquine, which, according to the Food and Drug Administration, should not be used to treat the coronavirus because it's not known to be effective and comes with risks. Andrea Mitchell asked Fauci how damaging it is for Trump to continue to defend the drug as a potential treatment. And he said, quote, "You look at the scientific data and the evidence in the scientific data, the cumulative data on trials, clinical trials that were valid, namely critical trials that were randomized and controlled in the proper way. All of those trials show consistently that hydroxychloroquine is not effective in the treatment of coronavirus disease or COVID-19. He reiterated the most important thing the nation can do is follow the science. I just have to say this. Hydroxychloroquine by itself has been proven not to be the effective agent. And this is something we know. It's hydroxychloroquine in combination with zinc and azithromycin. That combination in the proper dosage has been proven by doctors in the field, on the front line, to have been effective and is being taken by doctors on the front line as a prophylactic measure to prevent the being infected by COVID-19. These doctors are actively using it. But people like Dr. Anthony Fauci are, one, addicted to the worst case scenario. They're predicting dire outcomes. Dr. Anthony Fauci and people like him is where we heard that the totals come from in the beginning, the estimates of 2 million people dying. Plus, pay close attention to what he's saying here. He's talking about specifically hydroxychloroquine. Specifically. Not hydroxychloroquine plus zinc plus azithromycin. He's talking about hydroxychloroquine on its own. But MSNBC will not clarify that. I posted a video by Scott Adams, the guy behind Dilbert, the comic strip. And I hope it's still there because it won't be long before Facebook takes it down. But he explains. He's not a doctor, and he says so. And he's not in the pro-hydroxychloroquine thing. He's not campaigning for it. And he says so. But he does say hydroxychloroquine is the agent for delivering the zinc into the system. Either by itself is ineffective, but combined they work together. What Dr. Fauci is saying, he's talking about hydroxychloroquine on its own, not in combination, in the combination which is being used successfully. You should watch that video. Go to the Daily Perspective podcast page on Facebook. Let me look here and see. Look, there's the NBA thing. There's, by the way, the NBA and Black Lives Matter on the side of the court, and they all, both teams knelt. But the NHL stood and showed appropriate respect. So good for the NHL. Yeah, the Scott Adams thing is still there. It's a Periscope video, and the link is there. Ooh, let me pull that audio down. Yeah, it's still there, and it does play. And he says, he actually is telling you why President Trump is medically correct and CNN might be killing tens of thousands of people. CNN and MSNBC and the rest who are campaigning so hard because they hate Trump. You should watch that video. It's very informative. He doesn't claim to be a doctor. He doesn't play one on TV. He's just spelling things out for you. Thousands and thousands of doctors say this combination's working. But people like Dr. Anthony Fauci and the leftist press are blurring the lines and not telling you the whole story to blame a lot on hydroxychloroquine and not to give it the credit it's due. And I ran across this morning over on the Glenn Beck show on the Blaze news site. There's this story about a doctor who discovered something about hydroxychloroquine. And it's kind of an interesting, it's one of those things that I like to say makes you go, Dr. Simone Gold joined Glenn Beck on his radio program yesterday to set the record straight about hydroxychloroquine, what it is, how it works, and the real reason for all the current controversy surrounding a centuries-old medication. Dr. Gold is a board-certified emergency physician. She graduated from Chicago Medical School before attending Stanford University Law School. She completed her residency in emergency medicine at Stony Brook University Hospital in New York and worked in Washington, D.C. for the Surgeon General, as well for the chairman of the Committee on Labor and Human Resources. She works as an emergency physician on the front lines, whether or not there is a pandemic, and her clinical work serves all Americans from urban inner city to suburban and the Native American population. Her legal practice focuses on policy issues relating to law and medicine. She's also the founder of America's Frontline Doctors, a group of doctors who have been under attack this week for speaking out about hydroxychloroquine during a news conference held outside the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. It was their video that has been banned from Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. It was their video which got my page restricted. It was their video which has had many pages, many, many conservative pages and individuals' accounts restricted. This is those people. On the program, Dr. Gold emphasized that the controversy over hydroxychloroquine is a complete myth. She explained that hydroxychloroquine is an analog or a derivative of quinine, which is found in tree bark. It's the most non-controversial of medications that there is. It's been around for centuries. It's been in FDA approved in the modern version called hydroxychloroquine for 65 years. In all of that time, doctors used it for breastfeeding women, pregnant women, elderly, children, and immune compromised. The typical use is for years or even decades, because we give it mostly to rheumatoid arthritis patients and lupus patients who need to be on it essentially all of their life. So we have extensive experience with it. It's one of the most commonly used medications throughout the world. Dr. Gold told Glenn Beck she was surprised when the media suddenly vomited all over hydroxychloroquine, but initially chalked it up to the less predictable hatred for anything President Donald Trump endorses. However, when the media gave the drug remdesivir glowing reviews, despite disappointing clinical trial results, she decided to do some research. Remdesivir certainly wasn't a fabulous drug, she says, but the media coverage was all about how fabulous it was. At that moment, I thought it was really weird because it's one thing to hate hydroxychloroquine because the president endorsed it, but it's another thing to give a free pass to another medicine that doesn't seem that great. I thought that was really weird. So I started looking into it, and let me tell you, what I discovered was absolutely shocking. And here I have the audio of why she says this was shocking. Now, full disclosure, I have edited this audio. This is edited audio. But what is edited from it is the comments coming back from the interviewer, from Glenn Beck, because he interrupted her a couple of times and basically said what she was going to say anyway. And she just restated, she said in her own words, what she intended to say. So I took Glenn Beck out of her comments. But her comments stand on their own.
I found out that the drug was moved from over-the-counter status in France, where you can just walk in and buy it for yourself, to, quote, list two poisonous substance, which requires a prescription. This was done very quietly, if no announcement. You can find this, again, you'll find it on my website. And this was shocking, and this really didn't make the news or anything. Now, you have to ask yourself, why did France remove hydroxychloroquine off its shelves, especially when they knew that it was likely to work? And when I say likely to work, I say that because this COVID-19 virus is not all that novel, despite the name that it's been given. It is 78% similar to SARS-CoV-1. This COVID-19 is an acronym, really, for SARS-CoV-2. But there was a SARS-CoV-1. And in 2005, Virology, which is the official publication of the National Institute of Health, which was directed by Anthony Fauci at the time, published an article stating that it found that chloroquine worked prophylactically and in early treatment for SARS-CoV-1.
And that's just part of what she had to say. There's more. The links are in show notes today. The shocking part is when it was pulled. It was pulled in January. January. Before the panic hit. And you have to wonder why. And then you link that to another drug being praised.
We'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?
Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.